Hello and welcome to Stand Up Historian. My name is Kurosh and I bring this show to you from beautiful Seattle, Washington. Tonight I have prepared a subject that I hope you enjoy it. It has to do with Gnosticism, Archons, and a lot of beliefs that come from Gnosticism has some roots in Christianity and also many different cultures around the world. I hope you enjoy it. Let's start by introducing an important set of documents known as Nag Hammadi scrolls. In December of 1945, a red earthenware jar was found near Nag Hammadi, a city in Upper Egypt. And inside the jar were papyrus books dating from approximately 350 AD. The papyrus books were released in a collection and they were called the Nag Hammadi Library. And for the first time, we had the first-hand account of the earliest Christian beliefs. The writings were very different from the Gospels, comprised mainly of hearsay rather than elaborate social situations for Jesus' ministry. In the Nag Hammadi Library, we find first-hand encounters with inorganic beings called Archons. According to Gnostic Nag Hammadi teachings, Archons arose in the earliest stage of formation of the solar system, before the Earth was formed, and are capable of intruding on Earth. Archons are also considered predators that feed on human psychic energy. In fact, in Gnosticism, the Archons, which is a Greek name from the root archon, ruler, were malevolent, sadistic being who controlled the Earth, as well as many of the thoughts, feelings, and actions of humans. Archons assisted their masters, which are known as demiurge, with the creation of the world. In fact, they created a bad copy of the world as it was in form of a perfect place. And this copy is where we live. So these archons helped demiurge with the creation of this copy of the world and continued to help him, demiurge, administer his oppressive rule. According to a Gnostic text called Reality of the Rulers, the Archons, quote, have bodies that are both female and male, the faces that are the faces of beasts, end quote. Thus, they're not truly male or female, nor human, nor animal. The ancients found this type of boundary crossing between male, female, animal, and human to be deeply threatening and were very afraid of these kind of boundary crossing. And this description of the Archons implied that they were forces of chaos, so mixed up as to be, quote, the farthest that a created being could be from God, end quote. The reality of the rulers, the text that was found and I'm referring to, presents the Archons as bumbling, conceited oafs. They issue sanctimonious commands that they themselves don't understand. Huff and puff, quote, like storm winds, end quote, into the inanimate Adam's face in a failed attempt to bring him to life. So this goes back to the story that we have in Genesis in the Bible that shows how God bestowed upon humanity life. But these Archons, when they tried to do that, they failed to bring the man which was made from the dirt of the earth to life. Think they are raping Eve when they are really raping an empty image of her, and have to call out to Adam and Eve to find them after Adam and Eve have hidden from them. So, you see, this is a parallel story to the story that we read in the Bible. And some scholars, they call this a copy of the world we live in, a copy of the paradise that was created by God, and he gave life to man, to Adam and Eve, and they were living in the quote-unquote paradise. And these archons created a very bad copy of that world, and that, again, some scholars believe that we live in this bad copy of the world, in this hijacked form that we are in right now. That's why it says they tried to huff and puff like a storm winds into the inanimate Adam's face in a failed attempt to bring him to life, and then they call them to see where they have hidden. Despite their sometimes lacking in competence, the archons were extremely powerful being whom the Gnostics dreaded. They are mainly incompetent. They have this parasitic life because they need humanity to live, and they live on fear, insecurity, and lack of trust in humans. And the Gnostics knew that. Archons, at the same time, with all their weaknesses and all their issues and their incompetence, they were very powerful. The reality of the rulers quotes Ephesians chapter 6 verse 12. Our contest is not against flesh and blood, rather the authorities of the world and the spiritual hosts of wickedness. To make the point that the archons were what stood between humankind and salvation, Gnostics refer to this Ephesians 6, 12. It was they whom Christ had been sent to earth to overcome. In fact, Gnostics believe that it was archons that Jesus came to earth to destroy them and to warn humans about their existence. In the ancient world, the self was not seen as being as autonomous as we today think of it as being. It was a playing field where various forces intermingled and battled, ultimately giving rise to our thoughts and actions, good and evil, forces of good and forces of evil. In the past, humanity was the very place that all the forces of good and evil exist, and they fight for the soul of humanity. For the Gnostics, the archons were among the most powerful and ubiquitous of these forces. So archons, they believed to be one of these forces. They were the ones who were ultimately responsible for all the evil thoughts and actions of humankind. It gets worse. Since the archons had created humans in the first place, they had created humans to be extremely susceptible to their influence and to be almost unable to resist it. So if archons created humans, they made sure that humanity is extremely susceptible to influence, and they can at any time change humans. And just from the name of the god they serve, Demiurge, and succumb to urges that these archons create. Only the divine spark from heaven, which had slept into creation, despite the archons' intentions, gave people any kind of hope or chance of resisting the archons' temptations. But only a few people, the Gnostics, were even aware of that divine presence within themselves, the light of God within you. So this is what a lot of wise men in the past tried to tell the humanity, that you have the light of God within you, and you have to rely on that to overcome temptations of life. So they were, according to the Gnostic beliefs, they were all referring to this fact, that in fact, in spite of all the efforts that archons put into creation of man and making sure it's a corruptible creature, the divine spark from heaven slipped into the creation. This reminds me of the verse from Leonard Cohen that says, "There's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. This is what it is, the light from divine creator." But it's only Gnostics that are aware of this divine presence within themselves. And even for them, it was a tremendous ordeal to act in accordance with the presence rather than the wishes of archons. Again, the good angel, the bad angel on your left and right shoulder saying what's right, what's wrong, and this duality, you see it here. And even Gnostics, that they were aware of the divine spark in them, they had hard time to overcome temptations from archons. Most people were just the puppets of the archons. This is very important to understand. Even today, when you look at the humanity, you can apply this belief that there are just a few that they believe that we have divine spark in us, despite of all the temptations and all the flaws and all the issues and weaknesses we have. And if we could just rely on that divine spark, we could free ourselves and become one with our God. Thus, the normal default state of humans was literal demonic possession. Everybody on earth is possessed by demons, which are archons. It's fitting that the Gnostics identified the archons with the entities that were worshipped as pagan gods. How could you fail to worship a god that already possesses and controls you, is inside you? If a person is possessed, how could you fail to worship that god? The number of archons varies across the Gnostic texts, but there are commonly said to be 7 archons, whose identities and names also are different from one text to the next. These 7 corresponded to the 7 planets that had been identified in antiquity, whose movements were credited with producing astrological faith. And we still look at the stars for our faith. And those 7 original planets, which they were present in ancient times, each relates to one of the archons. Astrological faith was the main means through which the archons controlled people's lives. After giving a list of 7 archons, the Secret Book of John, that's another book from the collection of Gnostic books, or Nag Hammadi. Secret Book of John says, "This is the sevenfold nature of the weak. The 7 archons also corresponded to the 7 days of the week, which could be expected since the days of the week were already named after pagan gods and planets to which they correspond." So before I go any further, let me tell you a little bit about these 7 days of the week. Sunday is obviously the sun's day, the name of a pagan Roman holiday. In many folklore traditions, Sunday was believed to be a lucky day for babies to born. Many societies have worshipped the sun and sun gods. Perhaps the most famous is the Egyptian sun god Ra. So that's Sunday. Monday comes from another pagan god, which is the moon's day. On this day, people gave homage to the goddess of the moon. And remember, these are all corresponding with the heavenly bodies, as Gnostics were explaining. It was believed by ancients that there were three Mondays during the year that were considered to be unlucky. First Monday in April, second in August, and last Monday in December. So far we have Sunday as the sun's day, Monday as the moon's day. And now let's see what is Tuesday. Tuesday is the first to be named after a Germanic god, or pagan god, Tiu or Tuia, a god of war and sky and associated with Norse gods, Tyr, T-Y-R, who was a defender god in Viking mythology. So that's our Tuesday. Tiu is associated with Mars also. He is usually shown with only one hand. In the most famous myth about Tyr, he placed his hand between the jaws of the wolf Fenrir as a mark of good faith while the other gods pretending to play. Wednesday means Woden's day in Norse, Odin. The old Norse is equivalent to Mercury. So Wednesday is associated with Mercury. Tuesday was associated with Mars. Thursday was, yes, you guessed it right, Thor's day. Thor, the famous Thor, named after the Norse god of thunder and lightning, very famous from all the Marvel and DC movies and what have you. And it's Old Norse equivalent to Jupiter and associated with Jupiter. So that's our Thursday. Friday is associated with Freya, the wife of Woden and the Norse goddess of love, and obviously associated with the planet Venus. And finally, Saturday, derived from the Saturn's day, which is planet Saturn. So when Gnostics said this 7 days of the week are associated with seven heavenly bodies, we have Sunday with the sun, Monday with the moon, Tuesday Mars, Wednesday is associated with Mercury, Thursday Thor's or Jupiter, Friday Freya or Venus, and finally Saturday with Saturn's day. So you see how these days, the names came to be what they are today. Though this string of connections, the archons also corresponded to the 7 days of the creation in the book of Genesis. The Gnostics interpreted the plural os or Elohim in Genesis 1:26. Elohim is a plural in Hebrew. Let us make man in our image, as referring to the archons. So in Gnostic teachings, it was a group of archons. They said, let's make the man in our image. In its original historical context, that quote-unquote os almost certainly referred to the divine council in the ancient polytheistic Near Eastern mythology, a concept that Judaism hadn't fully left behind when the text that's now the first chapter of Genesis was written. Yes, this is very true. Judaism in the beginning was not a monotheistic religion. There is a lot of documents and resources that shows that they still had that polytheistic beliefs in the mix of their newly created religion, or even in in the Torah. There is one further correspondence to pay attention to here. In ancient thinking, each planet occupied one of seven celestial, quote-unquote, spheres or layers of the sky. Ancient people, they believed that the sky is seven layers. You see it everywhere. You see it in Persian mythology, Greek mythology, everywhere. There are seven layers of heaven and seven layers of hell. So these spheres or layers of each layer associated with one of these archons. Each of the seven archons therefore ruled over his own celestial sphere. And this concept of celestial sphere exists today in the beliefs of Mormon Church, which is very interesting. At some point I need to do some research on that and present it to you. Now, this provided the archons with a further way to inhibit people's spiritual progress. So you see, everywhere that you look, there is a number seven associated, whether it be astronomical numbers, beliefs in seven heavens above, 7 days of the week, 7 days of creation. Each one of these is associated with archons. So they had humanity completely surrounded, and they had humanity in their, they have perhaps still in their control. For the Gnostics, when someone tried to gain salvation, which they called Gnosis, by the way, this Gnosis, Gnostic with the silent G in the beginning, this is the same word that we have the word knowledge today with K-N-O-W, and this is G-N-O. So they called salvation Gnosis and characterized as mystical insight rather than intellectual belief or moral actions. So they believe that Gnosis is mystical. I have many times mentioned the name Rumi as a Sufi and a Persian famous poet with his amazing work. Tens of thousands of poems from him is left today. And he always, the foundation of his teaching says, if you are trying to reason and try to find reality and salvation through reasoning, you will fail. It is not going to work. And it's like a man walking with wooden legs. It's going to break. This is very much like what Gnosis is for Gnostics. You only find salvation through mystical insight rather than intellectual, long and meaningless philosophical conversations and even moral actions. For a person, his or her spirit ascended up through the celestial spheres toward heaven. The spirit of the Gnostic made this journey both during the Gnostic's life in moments of ecstatic enlightenment and after death to reach its final resting place. The only form of religion that I've seen, they don't consider a dead person as being still able to gain salvation is among Protestant Christians. And in Judaism, we have that. There's a special prayer, Kaddish, for the deceased. And you have the same things in Catholicism and Orthodox Christians. And this part is referring to the fact that a person has an opportunity to gain gnosis, knowledge, and salvation while the person lives on earth by knowing his or her divine spark and clinging to that and trying to use that for salvation. And even when they pass on to the next world, there is still a possibility of salvation. It's not done by death by any means. But the mature Gnostic was able to overcome all of the archons and ascend all the way to heaven, which made him or her superior to the very creator and rulers of the world, which are archons in their belief. Another seven that just popped into my mind was seven deadly sins. The seven deadly sins, which are lust, gluttony, greed, sloth, wrath, envy, and pride. So they are also associated with seven archons. So you see, they are omnipresent, and as I mentioned it, ubiquitous, which means they are present everywhere at any given time. And humanity has little chance to escape from them. That's why the salvation doesn't come to everybody. Archons are not just a figment of imagination for Gnostics. Archons, they have a precedent in Christianity. As bizarre and perhaps unchristian as Gnosticism's archons may seem, the concept probably came from the Gnostics' good faith interpretation of the scripture and mythical traditions they shared with other Christians of the late 1st and early 2nd centuries. So this was an interpretation from the already existing Christian teachings and beliefs, the existence of archons. This process seems to be encapsulated in the first paragraph of the reality of the ruler script. The text begins by quoting the Apostle Paul's aforementioned statement in Ephesians 6:12, which said, again, quote, "Our contest is not against flesh and blood, rather the authorities of the world and the spiritual hosts of wickedness," end quote. The text then promises to inform the curious reader about the nature of this quote-unquote authorities, after which begins a description of and commentary on the archons' role in the creation of the world. So these Gnostics, they borrow from Christian writings, for example, Ephesians that I just mentioned, and they build on top of that the belief in archons, and they start their commentary and description of what these archons are and the role they play in the creation of the world. The entire text is essentially an interpretation of Paul's teachings. Much of the same can be said for the idea of existence of the archons in and of itself, which makes it highly probable that the Gnostics received their inspiration for the idea from Paul. So it's not too far from the Christian beliefs. In almost all of the books attributed or epistles or letters attributed to Paul that would later come to be included in the New Testament, which we have to remember that it didn't exist in any formal capacity when Gnosticism arose, the world is said to be ruled by mysterious powers. So Paul always talks about the world being ruled by mysterious powers and authorities. Don't you feel that every day when we live, when we see the events on the earth, we understand that these are not random events that's happening because of decisions we make, actions we take, and so on and so forth. You feel like there is something else behind it. You talk to conspiracy theorists, and you ask them, okay, what do you mean by they plan this? I want to say archons perhaps are the quote-unquote they. The word used to denote these beings differ from passage to passage in Gnosticism. They can be principalities or archai, dominions, those they have dominion over others, or authorities, powers, or lordship. Most of these passages specify that these powers are evil. The enemies of Christ and Christians are evil. And that's why this world belongs to devil. There are many passages in the Bible that talks about Christians are not from this world. For example, John chapter 17, verses 14 through 16 says, I have given them your word, and the world has hated them, for they are not of the world any more than I am of the world. Another place in John 15, verse 19, it says, if you belonged to the world, it would love you as its own. Again, John chapter 8, verses 22 through 24 says, so the Jews said, will he kill himself, since he said, where I am going, you cannot come? He said to them, you are from below, I am from above. And also, there are other passages which are very interesting, such as this one. This is from, again, John 5:19. We know that we are children of God and that the whole world is under the control of the evil one. And here's the last one. Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. Therefore, and this is Paul, therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is. His good, pleasing, and perfect will. And there are many other passages that you can find that tells the Christians, you are not from this world. Because Gnostics, they tell us this world was created by Archons, the evil ones. In some cases, these passages could simply refer to human political authorities. But in other passages, this is clearly not the case. Ephesians, for example, specifies that they dwell in the sky. And another place in the Bible refers to them as elemental spirits of the universe. Paul never develops his doctrine directly or systematically. Instead, his letters, including letters written by others in his name, seem to just take it for granted that the world is ruled by evil spiritual powers of some sort. So it seems like Paul knows this fact, but he never systematically write it down or taught that to anybody. Much of the same can be said for some of the other texts that would later come to be included in the New Testament. Because, you know, it was centuries after Christ when the New Testament canonized, and it was canonized, and all the books that you have today is in the Bible. The Gospel of Matthew, the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 4, verse 8, Gospel of Luke, chapter 4, verse 6, Gospel of John, chapter 12, chapter 14, chapter 16, 1 John, all say that Satan, or a similar being, whom the Gnostics equated with the Demiurge, the chief of the Archons, is in control of the world. I think if you have such belief, you can explain a lot of things that is happening on this world. The Gospel of John even specifically calls this being the Archons of this world. The root for Archon is in Persian also a little bit different in pronunciation, or Arkan, which means the foundations, what you build something on top of. So Archons is also found in Persian mythology and Persian beliefs, as in terms of the word, is the same form, and the same word exists in Persian as well. But in terms of Archons, there are Devs and others that we can equate them to Archons, but the numbers are not seven. So I'll spend some time on that. later in a separate episode, perhaps. The New Testament writers therefore presuppose that the world is ruled by villainous spiritual beings of one sort or another. And this is a belief in every mysticism, every school that teaches you wisdom and esoterics, that this world, the essence of this world, is evil. This has long been recognized by scholars of the New Testament, who have usually attributed to the fact that it was taken for granted back then that the spiritual beings, pagan gods, controlled the elements and often directed events on earth. And you see that we have many different nations, they have gods of winds and earthquake and storms and all these natural disasters. They associate a god with them. That rather than deny the existence of pagan gods altogether, the New Testament authors simply demoted them to demons. They also drew from apocalyptic Judaism, out of which Christianity arose, because it's Judaism that says at the end time there will be a Moshiach, or a Christ, a Savior, which posited that for obscure reasons, God had allowed Satan to gain control of the world at some point in the past. Even in Islamic beliefs, the world has to get to a point that chaos and corruption and evil deepens beyond anybody's imagination. Darkness gets so deep and impenetrable before the Savior comes. So, you see, this is not something that Gnostics alone believe that. So the world God opened the hands of devil and said, okay, this is yours. And he's playing all his chips today. Jews of the period and early Christians also believed that the good angels in the service of God presided over the elements and various facets of life. These angels were pagan gods who, instead of being demonized, had been depaganized, if you will, and placed in the service of God. This is getting very, very interesting when you read this Gnostic beliefs and you try to put them all together and try to explain them. As I explain this to you and go over all these notes that I have, things start popping in my mind and I start thinking, some of these bad guys changed side and became God's angels. The leaders of this troop of angels were commonly said to be seven in number, seven archons and seven good angels, with countless lesser angels under their command. Each of these seven angels dwelt in his own celestial sphere. As I said, seven layers of heaven. Even Irenaeus, a second century Christian bishop who wrote extensively and passionately against the Gnostics, believed in this notion. Since the Gnostics believed that Creator, God, with lowercase g, of the Old Testament was really the evil demiurge, it would have made perfect sense for them to demonize his seven commanding angels and identify them with the malevolent rulers of the world described by Paul. After all, as we have already seen, the Gnostics explicitly identified the archons with the pagan gods whom Paul had in mind in at least some of aforementioned passages from Paul's writings. Just to wrap this up, so we have archons or archons as evil creators of the earth for their demiurge god. And they are predators that feed on human psyche and energy. And understanding archons in Gnosticism, some people rely on ancient Sumerian records and Gnostic teachings and their illuminating effect. So, thinking about how archons are being presented by Gnostics and references they have from Bible as the proof of their existence, although Christians and Gnostics, they have this long history of animosity, mostly Christian church, and there were times that Gnostics, they had large numbers, but eventually it was the church and the dogma of the church that prevailed and gave us the Christianity that we have today. But Gnosticism has become the source of a lot of attention, and in many cases, when you study what they say, it makes sense. So, in short, in Gnosticism, the world is created by evil, but God put a spark of divine life in every human, and a chance for humanity to escape this vicious cycle of life, death, rebirth or reincarnation, and living through this again and again and again. The salvation is based on gnosis or knowledge, understanding the reality of this life and understanding that there is a crack in everything, and that's how the light gets in and flying and going to that light. I hope you enjoyed this very hectic episode, because as I was presenting this to you, a lot of thoughts start pouring into my mind about Gnostics. I have to organize them for another episode. But before we leave, I like to add something that I found it very, very interesting. And that's about individual spiritual sovereignty is one in which human beings break away from this cycle by recognizing their God-given autonomy. So forget about good and evil presented. You have autonomy and potential using the gift of free will. And you only use it when you understand that you are a spiritual being. You are not just the biological skin that is presented and walks around in this physical world. To be sovereign is to be free. And it is important in the process to affirm our sovereignty so that we can recognize the other interference of other beings in our energy field, limiting our potential intentions and life purpose. It is very important to have your guards up. Make sure that you filter what comes to your mind, what comes to your life. This is all about that. The so-called Archon Matrix, therefore, demands radical new spiritual solutions. I said it in the beginning. They demand some sanctimonious commands, and they don't even understand what those things are. Don't you see those all around you in our world? But the truth is, the answers have always been with us for thousands of years, as the Nag Hammadi scrolls demonstrate. Therefore, in reconnecting with our true potential, a return to Gnosticism as knowledge should perhaps be considered a worthy path, the knowing. By definition, the Gnostic path avoids any structural ideologies, any organized religion, except to say we must all sincerely being to explore within. The answers are within, not without. Without is a presentation or a projection created by evil, and it's all about deception. So when they say free your mind, turn your mind, look inside, find your spirituality, and search for salvation from there, not from the world. So I hope it didn't become too much preachy. Thank you very much for listening. I wish you all great times wherever you are, and until the next time, bye-bye.